advisement. The next case this morning is number 013271, Edith Jones against R.R. Donnelly Sons. Mr. Abram.
Good morning. May it please the court, Thomas Abram on behalf of appellant R.R. Donnelly Sons. Your Honors, at issue is the appropriate statute of limitations applied to plaintiff's claims under 42 U.S.C. section 1981. That section, of course, does not have its own statute of limitations, but for at least a quarter century since the Supreme Court's decision in 1975 in Johnson versus Railway Express, it has been well established that the most analogous state statute of limitations is to be applied. Here in Illinois, the forum state, this court has held that that is the two-year limitations period for the Illinois personal injury claims. Nevertheless, the district court here below ruled that the federal four-year catch-all statute of limitations in 22 U.S.C. section 1658 applied to plaintiffs' section 1981 termination and harassment claims. We submit that the decision of the district court is against the manifest intent and purpose of section 1658. We ask that that ruling be reversed and that this court rule that all of the plaintiffs' section 1981 claims herein not be subject to section 1658, but rather be subject to the two-year Illinois limitations period. In enacting section 1658, the court sought clearly to limit the borrowing of state statute of limitations where the federal cause of action does not have its own limitations period. But Congress was faced with a choice: what to do with those statutes which, certainly like section 1981, had a well-established precedent which already provided for the borrowing of the analogous state statute of limitations. Congress could have, if it had chosen to, simply applied section 1658 to all actions accruing after its effective date to such causes of action. But it didn't do that. Instead, Your Honors, the court concluded that section 1658 should apply prospectively only, so that the settled expectations of the parties based upon that well-established precedent of barring the state statutes of limitations would not be disrupted. In this instance, the court below chose not to look at that legislative history. Instead, the court looked solely at tried to parse the text of section 1658 for its abstract plain meaning. Now, Your Honors have been discussing today in previous cases the role of legislative history. Let me say that the plain meaning rule applied by this court, the court below, is not a good of its own. Rather, it is a tool used because oftentimes that is the most reliable intent or expression of Congress's intent or the drafter's intent. However, this court has repeatedly held that where the statute is ambiguous, that is susceptible of more than one interpretation, or where a literal interpretation, an application of the statute, would be at clear odds to the intent of the drafters, that you do have an obligation, and this court has repeatedly directed the trial courts to look at the legislative history for guidance. And I would refer you to page 13 of our brief and the cases cited therein for those precedents by this court. Here, Your Honors, clearly both situations apply. First, we've fully briefed this issue, but let me say simply today that of the 21 district court decisions that have addressed this issue, they've reached three different conclusions. First, all 1981 claims are subject to 1658. Some are subject and none are subject. Now, our position, of course, Your Honors, is that the only faithful interpretation of 1658 is that it simply doesn't apply to any 1981 claims. And indeed, the great majority of district court decisions and the only two court of appeals decisions have so held. But nevertheless, it seems to me that it was at a minimum incumbent upon the district court to recognize that there was ambiguity on the face of the text of Section 58 in the sense that it was susceptible to two meanings. Secondly, the legislative history here is clear and provides definitive guidance. That is, that it is not to be applied retroactively to upset settled precedent for borrowing states' analogous statutes of limitations. Here, that's precisely what the decision below does. There, the district court held that Section 1658 applied to the termination and harassment claims because the court reasoned that the Supreme Court's decision in Patterson interpreting the scope of the make and enforce that the cause of action under 1981 did not reach those claims. But Congress, disagreeing in 1991, overruled Patterson and specifically said that in a definitional section added to 1981 section 1981 applies.
It's fair to call that simply a definitional section.
It is a definitional section,
well,
Your Honor.
What do you do with Rivers against Roadway Express?
Rivers, Your Honor, two things. First, Rivers was not asked to opine as to whether or not there was a new cause of action created.
It sort of did anyway.
Well, no, I, with all due respect, I don't believe it did, Your Honor. It, in fact, said specifically whether or not Congress intended to restore or expand Section 1981 in the wake of Patterson doesn't matter because it was focusing solely with regard to a retroactivity issue. And it simply said that that was not an issue. In fact, what Rivers says is that Section 101, that is the operative section, adding this new definitional section, operates as a gloss on the terms make and enforce contracts. That, Your Honor, that original cause of action has existed since 1866. And it would seem to me that it would be wholly anomalous to suggest that by passing the 1991 Civil Rights Act, Congress would have, without comment or and without any discussion, sub silentio, overruled the long-standing precedent for borrowing under Section 1981, which just a year ago it so assiduously and carefully said it should be protected because Section 1658 should be applied prospectively only. I'll reserve the rest of the time for a rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. We'll hear now from Ms. Gorman.
Good morning. May it please the Court. There is nothing ambiguous about Section 1658. There have been some misapplications of some of the terms used in that law, but I think if this Court...
Well, that would seem to indicate that there is some ambiguity.
Well, if I could explain why I think there is no... nothing ambiguous. Section 1658, first the title. It's called Time Limitations on the Commencement of Civil Actions Arising Under Acts of Congress. The statute states, except as otherwise provided by law, a civil action arising under an act of Congress enacted after the date of the enactment of this section may not be commenced more than 4 years after the cause of action accrues. The U.S. Supreme Court, in the case of North Star Steel versus Thomas, said in a footnote, and I apologize to the court, this quote was in my brief before Judge Kennelly, and somehow it did not make it into my brief before this court, and I will supplement the record. The footnote one in the North Star Steel case said that Section 1658, in effect, reversed the expectation of borrowing limitations from state law for statutes passed after December 1st, 1990. And Section 1658 refers to a civil action arising under an act of Congress. The phrase a civil action is a term of art. It is used in our Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. You will find it in Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 2 and Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 3. It states that a civil action is commenced by the filing of a complaint. Some of the courts have taken the words a civil action and construed that to mean a claim. And that is not what it means. It means a complaint that is filed. Therefore, under Section 1658, any complaint that is filed after a new statute, under a new statute enacted by Congress after December 1st, 1990, has a 4-year statute of limitations.
Of course, the Court of Appeals doesn't consider this issue, haven't agreed with yet.
The Zuby Court, the Eighth Circuit, I believe it's the Eighth Circuit or the Tenth, has no real discussion. They just adopted it. But Zuby does. Zuby has quite a bit of discussion on it, and I'll tell you where I think the Zuby Court went wrong. Zuby framed the question, and that's on page 222 of its decision, and I'm quoting, whether for purposes of Section 1658, Zuby's claim arises under the pre-existing statutory language or under the 1991 amendments. However, the word claim is nowhere to be found in Section 1658. Section 1658 only refers to causes of action, which are clearly defined in the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure as the commencement of a complaint. I respectfully ask, why would we care if Mr. Zuby's claims could have arisen under a statute that doesn't exist anymore? That was really the question that Zuby looked at. The question should have been whether his complaint was viable under the existing statute, which was Section 1981B. Mr. Zuby had a discriminatory discharge case. The Zuby Court acknowledged that Mr. Zuby did not have a claim under the 1991 Civil Rights Act, but then they went on to hold that the 1991 Act, which gave Mr. Zuby his cause of action, had its roots in an old law that predated Section 1658, and therefore, even though he did not have a cause of action until Congress passed the 1991 Civil Rights Act, the 1991 Act somehow wasn't a new law. If this court were to follow Zuby, what it would mean is that every new act of Congress would have to be researched. It would start a cottage industry of trying to figure out if it had any roots in an old law. The fact that Section 16, the Section 1981B...
Well, you started off by telling us that this section was not ambiguous. And certainly Congress, if it wanted to enact a national 4-year statute of limitations in all cases, which probably would be a very good idea, certainly could have done that, but didn't do it here.
It didn't do it. It said for all new causes of action. And this is a new cause of action.
You're in a sympathetic position because your client has a 2-year Illinois statute, and it stands to benefit. But in some other cases where there's states where there are more generous statute of limitations,
I think that's exactly why the Congress wanted to have a 4-year statute of limitations, so that we would not be doing forum shopping, going from one jurisdiction to another. But the plaintiff complaint...
Well, usually you have to bring your lawsuit where it arose, so you can't...
With major companies.
Shopping around.
With major companies like Donnelly that have locations in many different states, so forum shopping is definitely a possibility. But I would like to point out that plaintiff's complaint, which was filed on November 25, 1996, was filed under Section 1981B of the 1991 Civil Rights Act, which is codified a public law as Section 102-166, 105 Statute 1071. There was no statute of limitations in the 1991 Civil Rights Act for 1981B claims. Therefore, Section 1658 should apply. This is a new law, just as the Supreme Court said in North Star.
Could you have a different statute of limitations for different sections of different claim violations of Section 1981?
I do not believe so. It's a new law. The old law...
Well, the old law was interpreted as just simply making contracts.
And a new law was drafted. And one of the problems with the Zuby Court is that they are acting as though these two laws are somehow coexisting with one another, that there's 1981 and there's 1981B. These laws are not coexisting. 1981 no longer exists. The law, as of November 21st, 1991, is Section 1981B, which is the law that my clients filed their complaint under.
If you had a case involving the making of a contract, would you apply the four-year statute of limitations?
Correct, Your Honor, because that's what the law is. And what the law says is any civil action that is filed after December 1st, 1990, which relies on a cause, which relies on an act of Congress passed after that date, is a new cause of action.
But Congress has given protection to the making of a contract ever since the passage of the original legislation.
Yes, we filed under a new statute. The old
I
statute
understand you did, but I'm talking about a hypothetical of someone who's filing the case involving the making of a contract.
I am saying that Section 1981B, which encompasses some of the language of Section 91, the original 1981B is a new statute. It encompasses some of the old language, but that old statute no longer exists. And so, if you look at the language by the Rivers Court, and I'm quoting from page 1517, taken by itself, the fact that Section 101 is framed as a gloss on Section 1981's original make and enforce contracts does not demonstrate an intent to apply the new definition to past acts. And I ask this court, if we cannot apply the new definition to past acts, how can we go back to the old definition for new acts? If you don't have any other questions, I think that covers my issues.
Thank you, Ms. Gorman.
Thank you.
Mr. Abram, you have 2 minutes.
Your Honors, the 1991 Act did not recodify, did not institute a complete restatement of Section 1981. As Your Honors correctly indicated, the basic cause of action, and by the way, Black's Law Dictionary states that cause of action defines it as the rights which a party has to institute a judicial proceeding. That right under the make and enforce language has existed since the 1860s, and therefore the basic cause of action under which the case arises, the claims for harassment and for termination discrimination have arisen under a cause of action that has existed for well over a century. Indeed, their second amended complaint states that this action arises under the Civil Rights Act of 1871 as amended by the 1991 Civil Rights Act. The Zuby defense dissent, which they rely on very heavily, recognizes that the claim under that cause of action raised by Zuby arose under both statutes. Clearly, Congress knew what it was doing under 1658. The legislative history says it is to apply the new causes of action, the cause of action that Congress clearly understood to be in existence with the attendant, well-settled borrowing precedent under 1981 clearly cannot be disturbed by the fact that the Congress, 1 year later, simply extended the class of viable claims under that class of clause of action. And therefore, Your Honor, we would ask that the decision below be reversed and that this court rule that none of the 1981 claims are subject to Section 58. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Abram. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel for their briefs and oral argument today. The case will be taken under advisement.